Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show. Joining us, as always, on Tuesdays, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com. And I can't come up with a third one this time, but there's something inauguration, something. Andrew Malcolm.
That's right. Wait a minute. The inimitable inauguration instigator.
The instigator of inaugurations. There you go. Which is coming up, by the way. That's coming up.
We're all counting seconds here.
Are we not doing that? And this is the topic of your most recent column, right? Your VIP column over at redstate.com. And we should just go ahead and get into that because, I mean, that's kind of, may not be the top story of the week. I want to talk a little bit about the wildfires too. And I'm going to be interviewing, by the time this goes up, I will already have interviewed John Andrasik of Five for Fighting, who lives in that area. And he has a few things to say about the city and state policies that led to the disasters, at least the extent of the disasters.
Oh, that'll be good. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, so just briefly, you lived in that area, right? I mean, you were kind of up in the hills, right?
I was in the hills. Yeah. I was in the hills where there was a less of a major fire north of the city. But we had, we had fires when we were there for 20 years. And they are really scary. And for days you get ashes falling on your house and your driveway and your cars. And you got to wash them off because there might be acid in them. It's pretty scary stuff. And I did a post last week, actually, which was open. I recommend it to our listeners about what it's like inside a wildfire. I was inside a bunch of them in Montana, and how the thing that's natural is wildfires. They're cleaning up. Indians used to set them because they knew it would open the forest and give room for the game, which they could then hunt. But the unnatural thing is people building houses in places that are susceptible to fire. So it's almost like asking for it.
And it's true. And I think that the houses that are right along PCH that burned down, these are multi-million dollar mansions that were right on PCH. There might be an argument that maybe those people need to find other plots of land, and maybe we shouldn't be building residences right there. Not just because of fires, but also because of, you know, the ocean. You know, there's all sorts of different issues along those things. But I mean, the Palisades.
Yeah.
You know,
well, they didn't clear for years, right? I mean, right. this is ridiculous. And it's the same thing in the forest up north where all the people got killed. They didn't clean out the forest. All the environmentalists blocked logging. You know, when the bugs come through and they kill millions of trees, the trees become tinder. And they're going to catch fire. And the brush. But if you get in there in the first 18 months after their bugs kill them, you can use the wood, which, you know, why let it go to waste and create not catastrophe, it's worse than that, a maelstrom later.
Yeah, well, literally a firestorm.
Yeah.
And I mean, I lived in California the first half of my life. I didn't move out until I was 34, you know, and I'm 62. Well, I'll be 62 this year. I know you lived there for a second. Yeah, I know. Tell me about it.
But you don't look at it.
Ah, thank you. You know, there's AI does some really amazing things. That's all I can say. And the funny part about that is I bought a new camera a few weeks ago, and it's a whole lot sharper than my previous camera was. So now I have to make sure that I've shaved before.
Yes. Well, it's clever. It makes your beard look white. That makes you look old.
It is white. It really is. I mean, that's the color. You know, it's just on that topic really quickly. My beard was actually redder than my hair was, right? My hair was sort of a mid to darkish brown, but I had a lot of red hair in my beard and my mustache, right, all across my face. And what I have found is that all the hair that was red went white. Didn't go gray. It went white. The stuff that's brown is still kind of in there, but it was like a dark red, almost like an auburn, and all that stuff went white. I don't know what to tell you.
I'm sure the people listening are taking notes.
Oh, I'm sure they are. But at any rate, so I lived there about half my life, and these wildfires happen all the time, and the Santa Anas happen all the time. This is a wind that comes out of the desert. It dries everything out. Any spark will then set fire to anything. Some of this stuff was arson. Some of it was probably power lines. Some of it was probably just bad luck, right? But there's been a number of these fires that have been running with these extremely high winds. This is about as bad. I mean, these winds were hurricane strength winds, 80 to 100 miles an hour, which is a little unusual for that. And they had like fire tornadoes that were captured on camera, just to give you an idea of the intensity of this. So this stuff would have happened to some degree, no matter what. But if they had been doing the maintenance that you're talking about, removing the brush, removing the dead trees, sure, there would have been fires, but they would have been a lot more manageable by removing a lot of the fuel that added to those firestorms. And they would have had water if they'd filled the freaking reservoirs and they built the reservoirs that they were supposed to have built 10 years ago.
Yeah, they passed the bond issue and never got around to spending the money on building a reservoir. Maybe the money was spent on something else. This is what happens when a government gets overconfident and they keep electing Democrats all the time, predictably. And so they don't really care. They don't work to get elected like they do in a competitive political environment.
That's right.
Yeah.
So,
if they're not doing their job, you need to unelect them. But Californians seem so much, at least in the South, they seem so much like robots. They just, oh, well, we got to elect a Democrat. I know his name. Well,
on the coasts.
Yeah.
Like the whole coast, right? Because you go to the interior of the state and it turns pretty competitive.
Yeah.
In fact, it's a little bit more conservative than it gets liberal.
And that's where the Democrats get their leadership, is the coast.
Yep.
Maryland, Massachusetts, California, all the coasts. And they just got surprised by the heartland this time.
Well, on that note,
we get back to Joe Biden and my
get
column.
Back to Joe Biden and your column. Yes, that's right. I briefly distracted us from that discussion, but we're coming back to it right now. You wrote a column about Joe Biden's legacy will be the best ever. The God's truth is the quote of this. I mean, the hard spin on the Biden administration, from the Biden administration, is absolutely astounding to me that anybody's buying this for a moment.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Gallup did a poll, and you know what? 6% of the people said Joe Biden has done an outstanding job.
6%, huh?
6%. Where the hell have they been? I mean, that's 6%. Yeah.
They just came out of hibernation.
My God, 6%. I just can't believe it. It's just so hard. It's like they're not conscious. So what I wanted to do was to say, take a premature, obviously, legacies aren't done until historians do it some years down the road. Joe won't be with us, and probably I won't either. But if you take a look at Joe Biden's legacy, it's awful. It's just terrible.
Stem to stern. It is failure after failure after failure after failure.
And almost willful failure, like the border. I mean, the border was relatively quiet. And so he removes Trump's negotiated agreement with Mexico, and they flood in, over 10 million of them. And nothing gets done. The sympathetic media doesn't do their job as a government watchdog, and they sort of let it go. Well, okay, it's it's obviously plants for Democrat votes, but Trump is planning the largest deportation in history. Well, I wish him luck, but the same thing's going to happen to that as to the wall. It's going to get sued into his third term. They'll get away with deporting criminals. And there's a lot of them, by the way. I forget the number, but it's very large. It would take
hundreds of thousands, at least hundreds of thousands. Yes. They're going
to, that'll take 2 or 3 days to get rid of them.
That's exactly.
I kind of went through, not all of them. Good Lord. Nobody would read all of them. The major ones, the ones basically you and I've talked about all these years, Afghanistan, the border, inflation, just touching on them briefly, but noting the lies that he's telling, even as he leaves, he's trying to manufacture a legacy. You know, when he came into office, inflation was 9%. Well, no, actually it was under 2%. It went to 9% when he was in office, the worst in 40 years. So, I just basically wanted to call him out, but I tried to do it ironically or sarcastically in the headline, and I hope it worked. I'm not sure. There was a lot of readership, but...
But, you know, there's another way that you can measure...
The God's truth. My God.
There's another way you can measure this, right? Which is, how popular has Donald Trump become?
Yeah.
And... What I find fascinating about this, and I wrote about this, I think it was on Friday or Thursday of last week, right? As Trump crossed the streams. And by the way, I did get a lot of feedback about the image I used, which was from the Ghostbusters remake that starred, you know, Melissa McCarthy and Kate McKinnon and Kristen Wiig and Leslie Jones, which people really didn't like. And they were saying, how come you didn't use the shot from the good Ghostbusters? And it was like, because we don't have a licensed image from that one. we do like to make sure that we have a license for these things before we use them, because that's only fair to the people who create these things. And we want to make sure that we treat everybody fairly.
I would think movies would want all the publicity they could get.
Well, they would when they're first coming out, which is a reason why that image existed, which is because it was in our library from when that movie released, right? Ghostbusters, the first Ghostbusters movie came out in 1984. I mean, we weren't even, it was going to be another 23 years before Hot Air even launched, or 22 years before
Hot Air. Hot Air was in gestation at the time.
It wasn't even a glint in, Michelle Malkin's eye at that time, but yes. But I found something very interesting. First off, Donald Trump has never had net favorable popularity.
Yeah. Right.
He's never had net favorable job approval ratings, but that's a somewhat separate measurement. They're related, but they're a little different. Well, in the last 8 weeks, that gap has closed tremendously. It's I'm trying to do a Trump thing and I can't do it. But I mean, As Donald Trump comes closer to Inauguration Day, he's actually reaching the tipping point of becoming more personally favorable than unfavorable, which he's never, ever had in almost a decade as a politician, because it started in 2015. We're coming up, but in June, I think it was, the escalator ride down to the Trump Tower's lobby was, I believe, in June 2015. So we're coming up to a decade.
Yeah, that was his birthday. Yeah.
Yeah. And from that day on, politically speaking, or, you know, his favorability was always underwater, which is one of the reasons why it was remarkable that he managed to win in 2016. Also, he won in 2024 because Joe Biden's is even worse. So I'm going to get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
But you look at this over the last 8 weeks, he won, and I'll use 538. You can also use RCP. It's roughly the same type of thing. If you look at his favorability rating on November 5th, he was, and I'm trying to get it, unfavorable 52.2%, favorable 43.6%. So about 8.6 points difference, right, to unfavorable. Well, right now, it's His favorable rating is 47.2%. His unfavorable rating is 47.4%. That's since the election, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know how you can read that except as a reflection of Joe Biden's legacy, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Trump has run, I believe, a masterful transition. There've been leaks trying to hurt him, but they haven't worked. He's done it very well, smoothly, professionally. Most of the people he's picked are not controversial, even if the media tries to stoke it.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about that in a minute. But
yeah, but he's done that. Now we'll see if it continues to improve once he's in office and we get what he sometimes does, which is three or four media appearances a day, sometimes walking on his own message of the week or the day. But also, as you point out, the contrast with Biden is overwhelmingly positive for Trump. I'd be overwhelmingly positive for anybody, I believe. Right. And the same thing was sort of true back in 2016. Hillary Clinton was not very popular. I mean, this is the woman that left Americans to die in Benghazi. And Biden just gave her the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And she calling the Americans despicable and so on. It's just, so he's benefited from the people he's run against. And then in 2020, Biden, by his lying, and so, oh, we're going to return to normalcy, he created the contrast in his favor. So I think Trump has done a really good job. I hope he seems to have learned some lessons. I hope it's enough to stay focused on the job and not the petty little fights that he feels he has to respond to everyone.
Well, I mean, I certainly hope that that's the case too, but I mean, he's starting off in far better shape than he was when he took office the first time, right? And really far better shape than he was, even though he was a little bit more popular at the end of his term than he was at the beginning. You have to remember that Biden was at the time had a much better personal approval rating, right? Yeah. He was, so I mean, and right now, would you like to hazard a guess? You know, speaking about legacy, because this is what he's talking about. Would you like to hazard a guess? I'll say this: when he took office, and I'm looking at it again at 538, in February 1, 2021, which was the first measure that shows up on their chart, his favorability rating was 53.8% favorable, 40.3% unfavorable, right? And it crossed over, the streams crossed over shortly after the Afghanistan debacle. And I had said at the time, this is an inflection point. He is never going to recover.
You said that here. Yeah.
I said that repeatedly and people were, oh, no. People are going to get over it. No. It was revealing. There was something revealed in that whole despicable episode. And he's never recovered from that politically. Now, he did well enough in the midterms to hang on to the Senate, which was a little bit of a surprise at the time. But he lost the House barely, also a little bit of a surprise. So, you know, coming into this election, you think, well, you know, it's going to be competitive. But would you like to hazard a guess as to what his the gap on his favorable / unfavorable rating is at the moment? Donald Trump's is 0.2, right? Yeah. I mean, it's basically dead even between favorable and unfavorable, 47.2 favorable.
I suspect Biden's underwater a wee bit more.
So give me a guess, Andrew.
15.
17.9 points.
Oh, jeez.
His unfavorable is higher now by almost 3 points than his favorability was when he first took office. He's at 56% unfavorable. His favorable rating is now, and this is not just one poll. This is 538's aggregation. And I'm using 538 for a reason because Nate Silver weights these results. If you go over, the trends are exactly the same on Real Clear Politics, just the numbers differ because RCP doesn't do weighting. It just averages the results. His Joe Biden's favorable rating, average favorable rating on 538 is 38.1%. 38.1%.
Well, you know, last spring, I think I did a column, or at least I mentioned that no president had ever won re-election with a job approval in the 30s in the spring before the vote. So that came to pass. I think that would have come to pass for sure if he'd stayed in, but it rolled over to what's her name.
Well, you know, again, you know, you take a look at the Gallup had another poll, by the way, and determined that Joe Biden was actually less popular than Nixon was. Nixon's term.
Well, Nixon did a lot of good stuff. I mean, he did a lot of controversial stuff. And in the end, it wasn't so good. But he did a lot of, especially in foreign relations, and got us out of Vietnam, finally.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's like opening to China. It reminds me of the story of the Zen master, right? A lot of Richard Nixon's stuff kind of reminds me of the story of the Zen master. Now, you know, at the time, again, the focus was on the Soviet Union, and that was smart. But by opening up China, it sort of opened us up to some of the problems that we're dealing with now. That wasn't all Nixon's fault, because we kind of accelerated it during Bill Clinton's term to, you know, for most favored nation status, the WTO entry and all that kind of stuff. But the, you know, the story of the Zen master is, oh, that's wonderful, we'll see. You know, oh, that's terrible, we'll see. And the older I get, and as Andrew reminded me, I'm getting pretty damn old these days, the more the story of the Zen master makes a hell of a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. Yeah. I don't. And I think that's what's interesting. Trump is benefiting now, both from the comparison to Biden, but also, I think, hope. You know, we're coming out of a dark period with a president that you can't trust, who isn't there, who lies congenitally. And I said in the Sunday column that, you know, they've said over the years that if you lie enough, people will come to believe it. And Joe Biden lied so much that people came to expect it.
Yeah, you know, and I think that that's what this is. It's a collapse of credibility. And it started with Afghanistan, but it's just worse over the course. And the reason why Trump is getting this swell of personal favorability is because people really want to see an end to this administration. They really do. And you can talk to people, and even people who hate Trump are saying, well, you know, maybe it's time we move past this stuff that we were trying to do over the last 4 years. Everybody seems to recognize that the country was going in the wrong direction, and either they're going to put up with Trump for 4 years and try to change the direction, or they're going to get on board with the direction changes that are coming. So, and that brings us to the cabinet. You mentioned this, right? Because the cabinet, the confirmation hearings are going to start tomorrow. Pete Hegseth is one of them. I think Marco Rubio is on Wednesday. There's six of them that are going this week, and I think another six of them next week. And we're going to be doing live blogging of these things during the day to some extent, right? Because we're also going to keep doing our regular stuff. And CNN today is reporting, and this was my VIP column for Monday, that now it appears that Senate Republicans have completely lined up behind the entire slate of cabinet choices, right? Oh. Hegseth, RFK, everybody. They're just going to give Trump what he wants. And that's smart politics, really.
Sure.
Because if Republicans interfere with this and insist on him changing people out, then they kind of own what, you know, the mess that type of thing.
Yeah, no, that's very smart. Yeah.
But the other thing too, and I think that they realize this, is that Trump's really going to be the one dictating terms, which is what it's supposed to be. He's was elected president. That's what his job is. And so the, you know, as long as the people that he's picking aren't flat out corrupt, it's better to just get them in place so that he can make the changes and get things done, because more so than with other incoming administrations, this administration is really only going to have the first 2 years guaranteed to get to be able to get their agenda through. After that, it becomes incredibly dicey because Republicans may lose ground in the midterms and Trump can't run again in 4 years. It's going to have to be somebody else. So all of this nonsense that started popping up about Mike Johnson, you know, and him being the speaker, and that's bad because reasons. And, you know, Pete Hegseth isn't the right guy for DOD and RFK and, you know.
All the intramural stuff need to get by it. And that's very smart if they line up and do that. So all the credit to John Thune.
Yeah. And look, I mean, I think it's a smart, I think it's smart for John Thune to just get everybody in line and tell them to play ball. Just say, look, you may not be getting the person you want, but it's his person. And the point is that we've got to get these people in as fast as possible because Trump is prepared to do a whole lot through executive orders. Now, this is the big thing, right? John Barrasso on Sunday in the Sunday talk show says it's going to be shock and awe. 100 EOs, right? That's the, you've heard this thing?
Yeah.
The day of 100 EOs, you know. So, you know, a week from today as we're recording this, Trump will take office and immediately issues these executive orders. And you have to have people in place to execute the executive orders.
And with his mandate, even if you're going to fight about some of these EOs, he needs to show a huge flurry of activity right away.
Right.
And if he does, I think people will give him some space to actually implement them. Joe Biden did. Remember Barack Obama, day one, he's going to close Guantanamo. It's still there. I see Joe Biden.
Well, he's trying to close it, though. I mean, he sent what was another 11 Al-Qaeda people back to Yemen, which is in the middle of a civil war, mind you. And they're still trying to deal with that whole plea deal.
And he sent a bunch to Oman. Which is, I mean, if you're going to set these guys free, which is better because that's a stricter place. And I guess some of them asked to go to Oman because it's not as what's the word, steeped in radicals as some of the other places where they went and then immediately went back to fighting.
You know, didn't that used to be called East Yemen? Just... Seems to
I
me
don't
that,
know. I don't remember that.
Yeah. But at any rate, you know. So I mean, I think he's trying to do it in the last few days of his presidency, which is one of the reasons why I've made the argument that these transitions take too long. You really need to, once you have the election, you really need to make a transition in like a couple of weeks, right? I mean.
In parliamentary systems, it's much quicker.
Yes.
And imagine back in Lincoln's day, it was March. Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, until
FDR.
Was it that late? I guess it was that late. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but in those days, it took longer to get to Washington, D.C. from places like California, Oregon, Arizona, that type of thing. And now we don't have those issues. It's pretty easy to get across the country and get to Washington in time. So maybe we need to be looking at narrowing this down, or maybe we just shouldn't, you know, elect senile people.
I'm just saying
that might be an option, right? Maybe we just shouldn't elect the senile to the presidency. I don't know.
Yeah.
At any rate, you had one other thing. I just want to mention it just so people can make sure that they've had a chance to see this. You had one other VIP column up. Trump arrives just in time as the woke cancer spreads. And, you know, this is, I think, one of the driving forces behind what makes Trump more popular than ever right now is that he's willing to fight this battle. And it shows also how unpopular that crap really is. because it's making Trump popular, which he's never been before in a broad sense.
And the thing is, we go back, well, I go back to 2016, there were 17 Republican candidates. And if you had asked me then, which one of these veteran politicians or wannabe politicians is going to be able to tap in to the American psyche the best, I would not have picked a Fifth Avenue billionaire with his own castle in Florida. I mean, it's just, he's just so smart on that, so savvy. And the point is, he listens. You know, a lot of politicians listen, they pretend to listen because they're thinking of the next thing they want to say. But I think Trump really listens. And he's, you know, some people criticize him for being transactional, but there he was at the Carter funeral, getting along with Barack Obama and chewing the fat on something we don't know exactly what yet, but and Obama laughing and so on. I mean, it's a collegial thing, these ex-presidents, but of all the people to not get or to not get along, it would be Obama and Trump. But he's transactional. You know, I'm at a funeral, we can get along with the guy sitting next to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Whose wife opted out. Yeah.
Did you see the AI?
Yes.
The video of Kamala and Joe Biden fighting.
Well, it's, you know, fake. It's fake, if, but you, it's, if you watch the video, when you see Obama and Trump talking and laughing, and you, and Kamala turns around and looks at it, and her face comes around like that, like an angry sphinx. She's just so angry at Obama. Everybody's angry. It's an angry crowd. You know, this is why, I mean, I used to think it was ridiculous, but, you know, when somebody gets traded from a team or you get fired from a company, security escorts you out from your desk to the door. Yep. And I wish they'd been doing that with Joe Biden, who's granting more college loan forgiveness, putting in barriers on deporting immigrants. It's just, and we don't know what's coming. What's her name? The press secretary has said that there's more to come in the pardon area. So the suspicion is, well, since he did 37 of the 40 death penalties, the suspicion is that these are preemptive, you know, for the Faucis and the others in his crowd, who we don't know what they did wrong for sure, but he thinks they did. So he's going to grant him a pardon for unknown offenses. It's like the blanket pardon for Hunter. The guy is a piece of work. So somebody, once he lost or she lost the election and they were out, security should have been standing next to him to stop him from doing all this crap. He's just an angry, bitter old man who doesn't know what day of the week it is.
Yep, exactly. And he's in charge of the nuclear football. So there you go.
I know. Isn't that amazing? God almighty, for another week. Ah!
Another 7 days. Well, 6 days by the time this goes up on the site. But yes, it's scary stuff. On that cheerful note, though,
I might have some jokes.
I got a couple for you, too. But I'm going to let you go
first. You go ahead. Oh, okay. Let's see. A new study, this is Jimmy Fallon. These are all old. A new study finds more and more parents regret the name they gave their baby. They actually have a name for those parents, celebrities. I like that. And then Jay Leno, he says, a new census report says 1 in 6 Americans are now Hispanic. The other 5 are also Hispanic. They're just not Americans.
Wow. Ooh, that was pretty good.
And finally, Fallon, he says, a new study finds that 45% of adults still have rivalries with their siblings. And guess what? I read that like 3 days before my sister did.
Yeah, I know how that feels. I know how that feels, actually.
So I don't. Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay. All right. Speaking of siblings, I got two jokes for you. And this is the first one. It said, Alexander Graham Bell arrives at the family holiday dinner and declares, I just invented the telephone. And a voice from at the other end of the table says, well, I'm working on some pretty big stuff too, said his brother Taco. All right. And this is my, speaking of age, you know, ripping me for being, getting a little old and shaking my fist at the clouds. A man realized he needed to purchase a hearing aid, but didn't want to really spend a lot of money. So he goes to the hearing aid store and he asks the salesman, he says, well, how much do they cost? He says, well, anything from $2 to $2,000. It's $2,000. He says, can I see the $2 model? And the salesman says, sure. So, he says, he puts it around the neck. He says, you just put this little button in your ear and run the string down to your pocket. And the guy says, well, how does that work? And the salesman said, well, for $2, it doesn't work. But when people see it on you, they'll talk louder.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. I mean, why not? Maybe the $2 option's better. I have no idea. All right. Well, that's it for this week on our Waldorf and Statler, or Statler and Waldorf review. And we'll be back again next week. We're going to do it the day after the inauguration, because Andrew and I are going to want to talk about the inauguration in our next podcast. Excuse me. So you might expect it later in the day on Tuesday, or maybe early on Wednesday next week. So stay tuned for that. Andrew Malcolm, the prince of Twitter, the regent of redstate.com. We will talk again next week, sir.
Yes, we will. Thank you, Edward. Thanks, everybody. See you then.